The Early Learning and Elementary Education Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on your microphones for the roll call. Kirsten, please call the roll.
Chair Lupus. Vice Chair Coster.
Here.
Ranking Member Davis. Representative Caruso.
Here.
Representative DeSegli.
Here.
Representative Duggan.
Here.
Representative Hawkins.
Here.
Representative Hunchowski. Representative Lamarca.
Here.
Representative Learned.
Here.
Representative McCurdy.
Here.
Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon.
Here.
Representative Roach.
Present.
Representative Rodriguez.
Present.
Representative Tribolsi.
Here.
Representative Trunau.
Here.
Representative Williams.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Please remember to silence all electronic devices, be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee or the presenters, and push your microphone button after you've been recognized, as the green light on your microphone no longer represents a live mic. Getting started without our chair. As you recall, last session we passed HB 7011, a comprehensive bill designed to increase literacy rates for Florida's children. The bill focused on emphasizing evidence-based literacy instruction in teacher preparation programs, assisting with the transition to kindergarten, using data for informed instructional decision-making, increasing literacy supports for parents and schools, improving teacher and administrator training, and updating the reading endorsement. The Department of Education and a few other guests are here today to give an update on the implementation of the bill and take questions from the committee. From the department, we have Jacob Oliva and Carrie Miller. We're going to start with Carrie Miller, the Vice Chancellor for Literacy Achievement.
So good afternoon. I want to thank Chair Alupas as well as Vice Chair Foster and the committee members for having us today and giving us the opportunity to share about the literacy policies and practices that have been established through CARES as well as House Bill 7011. My name is Carrie Miller. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Literacy Achievement for the state of Florida. My major area of focus and emphasis is working to bridge early literacy policy and practices birth through grade 12 with the emphasis on a smooth transition for our kiddos from pre-K to K. And we have a very strong focus of building capacity across the state with building the knowledge and skill of all of our teachers to improve literacy outcomes for kids. And I can't thank you enough for giving us an opportunity to be here today. I always like to start with diving a little bit deeper into the landscape that is here in the state of Florida as it relates to literacy achievement. Always starting with our babies, right? Our kindergartners that are entering kindergarten for the first time, really being faced with academics potentially for the first time in their journey through their education system. So the Florida Kindergarten Readiness Screener is a statewide screening tool that is utilized to assess students' readiness for kindergarten based on performance standards. We know, actually, from research that for students that enter behind in kindergarten actually never catch up. 75% of those students absolutely never catch up. And so we know that that point alone tells us the importance of ensuring we're providing services and supports to our youngest learners. In the state of Florida, based on last year's fall Flickers assessment, our readiness rate currently is 57%. So we talk a lot about providing services and supports for our youngest learners, and one major milestone in a child's life is third grade proficiency to set them up for success moving forward in fourth grade and beyond. Something we know about third grade is you could literally predict whether a student is going to graduate high school or not based on whether they can read at the end of third grade. So what you see here is the reading trends in the state of Florida currently. The green line represents students that are at grade level or above, so that's the top line. The orange line represents the students that are scoring at the lowest achievement level on our state exam, FSA. And you'll see that in from 2015 to 2017, you see that we made some steady progress, moving about 5 percentage points of more students reading on grade level or above. And then you also see the orange line, burnt orange line, from 2015 to 17, you see a slope, you see progression going downward, which is what you want to see, less kids falling in the lowest achievement level on our state exam. But then you see from 2017 to 2019, you see complete stagnation, so no improvements from 2017 to 2019 for our students in third grade. You see there's a blank, right? That's when we pause on accountability, so we did not have our FSA assessment in 2020. Reenacted FSA assessment in 2021, and you see the dip in performance, rightfully so, as it relates to the disruption we've had with COVID, but you see a drop in performance, and right now, in third grade, we only have 54% of our Florida third grade readers at or above grade level. We want to ensure closing the achievement gap is an area of focus for our most vulnerable students as well. What you see here on the top line is you want to see lines going upward, right? The trajectory of these lines going upward, so we have more kids at or above grade level in third grade. So what I want you to imagine here is our state rate. So we have 54% is our state average of performance in third grade. So based on this chart, you see that white students are performing above that state average, while our African American and Hispanic students are scoring below that average. You want to see these lines going upward, simultaneously coming closer together, right? So closing that achievement gap. If you look at the bottom chart, these are our students scoring at the lowest achievement level on our state exam. You want to see these going downward. Right? What you'll notice here is 23% is our state average. So again, imagine that state average for all of our students and what percent of students fall in the lowest achievement level. Our white students are performing better than the state average with 11% scoring at the lowest achievement level on our state exam, while our African American and Hispanic students are performing below the state average with 30% scoring at the lowest level and 23% respectively. Here you'll see performance level of our English language learners, our students with disabilities, and economically disadvantaged students. Again, I'll describe what you see on these charts. The green line represents the number of students, the percent of students at grade level or above. The orange line represents the students that scored the lowest achievement level on our state exam. Those are the students that need intensive support to accelerate their progress in literacy. What you'll notice on the top slide is they're actually reversed, that we have less English language learners scoring at or above grade level than we do scoring in the lowest achievement level, okay? So we have 50% of our English language learners scoring in the lowest achievement level on our state exam. Those are the students that need intensive support. That same trend is reflected in student with disabilities data, okay? The bottom chart is economically disadvantaged, and what you'll see here is stagnation in performance from 2007 to 2019, and then again that dip in performance, recognizing that was our year of COVID. Due to the stats that strongly support the importance of focusing on our youngest learners, in combination with where we are today with achievement and literacy for our youngest learners, we have established a mission and three measurable goals, if you will. So one of our major milestones is ensuring kids enter kindergarten ready to learn, and we will measure that currently using Flickr. So increased percent of students reading to learn when entering kindergarten is a major area of focus and a goal for us at the department. We also established a milestone of grade level reading by the end of third grade, ensuring those students exit third grade with grade level reading skills to set them up for success in fourth grade and beyond. And we also want to focus on closing the achievement gap of our most vulnerable students. So I want to start with CARES. So a year and a half ago, the CARES Act was established and really had a laser-like focus on literacy initiatives. We are actually one of two states that leverage CARES Act funding to heavily support literacy policy and practices in the state of Florida, recognizing the sheer importance of starting early. So one of the major areas of focus and one initiative of CARES Act was establishing a screening and progress monitoring data collection system. It was really established because we no longer had our state summative assessment for that 1 year, and it gave us the opportunity to measure progress across time and then to deploy resources and supports based on districts' and schools' needs. CARES Literacy Initiatives, one other CARES Literacy Initiative was creating a regional structure, which we're going to hear a lot about today, to support districts and schools with improving literacy outcomes. We currently have 18 state regional literacy directors in the state of Florida to provide universal and targeted support, really supporting districts across the state and improving their practice and supporting teachers to improve their practice to increase literacy outcomes for our kiddos. Number three is providing professional development for our educators in our new BEST ELA standards, our English Language Arts standards, which are grounded in the science of reading. Part of this professional development also included improving the quality of our reading endorsement pathways, and we've established two as a state that we'll talk about here in a minute. Number four is providing high-quality reading curriculum to our teachers, ensuring they have evidence-based programs and practices in their hands. Those are things that are proven to be effective, so they are set up for success in providing instruction for our kids that are most vulnerable, which are those students that require Tier 2 and Tier 3 instructional supports, which are basically students that are needed in intervention or really extreme intensive intervention. And then lastly, we have established or are establishing a literacy coach credential program. The intent of this is to really upskill our literacy coaches. Literacy coaches build teacher knowledge and skill to improve their practice, ensuring that every teacher, right, has the knowledge and skill to teach all kids to read, ensuring that every student is sitting in front of a teacher that has that knowledge and skill to actually do that. Right? So our literacy coaches really build capacity of our teachers to provide solid, evidence-based instruction to meet the needs of our kids. We have established or are establishing a literacy coach credential program that will allow teachers or aspiring coaches to upskill their skills to earn a literacy coach credential on their certification in the very near future. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we progress through the presentation. So House Bill 7011 truly enhances and sustains many of the literacy initiatives that were established under CARES Act. One way it does this is through RAISE. So RAISE actually has two components. The component we're going to focus on today is the regional support structure, but there are two components of RAISE, which it's known as the Reading Achievement Initiative for Scholastic Excellence. We like to have acronyms in the education field, so it will be called RAISE. And so the one in which we're focusing on is the support structure, if you will, but the other component of RAISE is launching a tutoring program really designed for high school students that meet certain criteria and providing them the training they need to go in and provide support and a mentorship, right, if you will, for kindergarten through third grade students that are having difficulties in reading. So that's in its infancy stage, so we'll hopefully be able to share a little bit more about that with you in the future. So we're going to focus on the support structure today. So the visual you see here is really showing you how RAISE enhances literacy supports moving forward. So under CARES, as I shared, we created a regional structure. We have 18 SRLDs, and you see here the responsibilities in which they've had over the course of last year and the beginning of this year to date. And what we call this is basically universal and targeted supports. Their ability to provide supports at the school level is fairly limited, recognizing the sheer size of the state of Florida. So they have been able to provide universal and targeted support, which is basically providing regional and district level training with some school level support. Clearly, school level educators are invited to participate in district level trainings, but in regards to CARES, what we've been able to do, our capacity has been to provide really highly effective, high quality training and support at a more universal and targeted way, which is really state, regional, and district level supports. Okay. Under RAISE, it absolutely enhances what's been established in CARES and allows us to have more capacity to serve at a more intensive level. So we can provide universal, targeted, and intensive support, which means we can be on the ground, boots on the ground running to better support schools that have been identified in need of support in a better fashion to improve literacy outcomes for students within those particular schools that have been identified. Something else that RAISE brings is more of a structure to where we have somebody that can lead these efforts a little more effectively than we have been able to do to date, although I feel as though we've done a fine job, but definitely an area of room for improvement. And RAISE allows us to do that. We hire executive director to lead our SRLDs moving forward, which will double in size. So we'll have roughly 36 staff that are part of RAISE, our regional structure, to better support districts and schools to improve literacy outcomes for kids across the state. One other additional requirement under RAISE is that the schools that are identified will now have to create a school improvement plan with a strong area of emphasis and focus on how they are going to improve reading performance in those schools. Okay, so that's a new requirement with the identified elementary schools that they will have a school improvement plan and identify how they're going to improve literacy outcomes for kiddos based on within that plan. So what you see here is really a glance at the identified elementary schools across the state based on the criteria that was established in House Bill 7011. If schools have 50% or more students scoring below grade level on FSA at any grade, grade 3 through 5, they were identified as a RAISE school, okay? You'll see the universal targeted intensive supports that are provided as a state, recognizing that when you get to intensive and targeted, there's differentiated support customized to meet the districts and school needs, which you'll hear from a state regional literacy director on what that looks like, as well as a district literacy leader in Osceola County, and share her collaboration on what that looks like as well. But the main area of focus of this is identifying where these schools reside. We have 1,458 of them. They're across the state. What you'll see is those districts that have the most schools that have been identified so far are in gold and navy blue on your map. You'll probably recognize there are larger districts, which makes sense. And then those that you see in lime green or seafoam green, my favorite color, are those that have less schools that have been identified in need of that more intensive support. So we will build our new RAISE structure around where these schools reside so we ensure we deploy regional directors to best support them in this effort.
Vice Chancellor, can we pause right here because I know there's some questions in the committee. Representative Roach.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you. If you could go back to slide 5, just real quick.
There we go.
I wanted to ask you, how does DOE define economically disadvantaged?
Nice. You recognize.
Oh, thank you. And may I defer this question to Senior Chancellor Oliva?
Good afternoon, Senior Chancellor Oliva.
Good afternoon, Chair Lucas. How are you?
Good to see you, sir.
So when you look at, may I answer the question?
Of course.
When you look at the metric for economically disadvantaged, it follows a formula for students that qualify for free and reduced lunch.
Okay.
You're recognized.
So is it correct if I say that the economically disadvantaged is capturing those students who qualify for free or reduced lunch, that's the only metric?
You're recognized.
For that particular metric, yes, but just note that one student can be in multiple measures. So you could have a student that has free and reduced lunch, that's also an English language learner, that's also a student with disability, that may be of a certain demographic. So that metric may be populated with a student that counts in several different metrics.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Caruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is directed towards Vice Chancellor Miller, who I haven't heard the term kiddos in 40 years since my grandma used to call me a kiddo. So I appreciate that. Brings back great memories. And to continue with the questioning, though, what percentage of third graders that underachieve or are at level one fail to graduate? You mentioned it. I just missed it.
Chair?
You recognize.
Thank you. So actually, the stat in which I gave you in respect to the graduation is really a national stat. If we know that if they can't read by the end of third grade, they have a 90% chance of not graduating high school. That isn't a specific Florida stat. So that is a national stat that has been identified, is why it's been identified as a need, right, and a milestone for us. And specific to Florida, I'm not certain I can answer that question, but I'll be glad to follow up and provide that information to the chair to then provide it to you all.
Thank you. And chair, follow-up question?
You recognize.
Thank you, chair. And vice chancellor, what you talked about the structure that we've created around RAISE. What specifically have you identified as a means to improve reading literary skills? What are some of those things that the schools have to come up with?
So very good question. So the major area of emphasis and focus we have on is identifying what strategies and practices we know work. Okay, so there's a body of research, science of reading is typically the coined phrase in which is used, that we know if we are providing instruction aligned to the science of reading, delivering not just the what, but also the how, we can have improved literacy outcomes. We also have our new best ELA standards that are grounded in the science of reading, right, to help teachers know the what, as well as supporting those teachers with the how through professional learning through our state regional literacy directors across the state, as well as great district literacy leaders that you'll hear from today as well. So I would say the science of reading, evidence-based practices that are proven to work, aligned to our new best ELA standards.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we go back to slide 8, please? Where you speak of the tutoring program that you would develop for high school students to be able to tutor the K-12 students. Will those high school students receive high school credit, a small stipend, or volunteer service hours?
You recognize.
So actually, House Bill 711 sets us up really nicely in that there's incentives to participate in being a high school tutor of students that are struggling in the kindergarten through third grade well. And some of those include their hours itself that they are providing tutoring services and supports can count towards their community service hours as part of our Bright Futures program. They also can earn credit for being a part of this program. Now, these high school students do have to meet certain criteria to participate in this program, but they earn those credits, as well as, I believe, they're kind of penned as a New World Scholar as well. So they're recognized for their duties and their support of trying to improve literacy outcomes for our youngest learners.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Question, is there anything in this to address like two-generational model, particularly like around the adult, the parents, caregivers, because that is an issue. That's an issue.
Chair.
You recognize.
So throughout House Bill 711, it does touch on parent supports. I'll give you a couple of examples. One example is through House Bill 711, we are now required to be more responsive and more communicative to parents, not only sharing where their students are, right? If they're having difficulties, what are some strategies in which they can deploy, but giving them resources to help support literacy in the home in general. Trying to think of another example. So As a department, we also have created parent guides to help with our new best ELA standards. So we have a new set of standards, so we want to educate parents on what that is, what the expectations of our kids are in each grade as they progress K-12, and we have parent guides that have been established for our ELA best standards as well. I would say those are probably the two that reside or fall under either CARES Literacy Initiatives or House Bill 7011.
Follow-up? Vice Chancellor Miller, I have one question. So there are 1,458 elementary schools that have been identified for additional support under RAISE. You have 20 RAISE teams. I think you mentioned 36 staff total. So how are you prioritizing those 1,458 schools in terms of who gets, you know, services?
So very good question. I'm assuming I can answer, Chair. Okay, thank you. So that's a super great question because we've identified 1,458 elementary schools based on the criteria that's been established in House Bill 7011. We have 36 staff, or will have 36 staff. You'll see our timeline here in a minute on getting those onboarded. To truly provide intensive support for these schools. So we have to apply what we're calling tiers of support. It's represented support alone. It means nothing as it relates to accountability system. It is just the support in which we can provide to build capacity across the state. So all schools will receive universal support, which an example of that would be professional learning that we provide as a state or within region for our SRLDs, and then touch on districts as well. Our targeted support is more district-level hands-on support, working strategically with the district to provide professional learning, and then touching the school a little bit as it relates to implementation of that professional learning that's been provided. And then the intensive support is school-based support, boots on the ground, providing service and supports to build capacity of school-level literacy leadership teams to ensure everyone in the school has the knowledge and skill to effectively improve literacy outcomes for kids. Okay, so those are kind of the tiers of support, but how we determine that is looking at the data, okay? So how these schools are initially identified, again, is if they have 50% or more students scoring at the that are below grade level, right? In any grade 3 through 5, they were identified. So our next level of criteria is looking at, did they not meet that criteria in every grade? Like, did they not have more 50% or more kids on grade level, right, in 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade? So did they all not meet the cut score in every grade, 3 through 5? So that would be our targeted levels of support. Our intensive levels of support get a little bit more unwieldy because there's more criteria to make that determination initially. But one is we focused on 3rd grade. If they had a yes, as in they didn't meet, they don't have enough kids, right? So 50% or more of their kids aren't at grade level. No matter what, they fell in intensive. If there was a yes in 3rd grade, recognizing that's one of our milestones, they fell in our intensive category. And then from there, we took the lowest 30% that fell in that category. And then there's a rounding that you have to do because the lowest 30% could potentially hit like at 25%, right? The school had 25% of their kids. Well, there could be a lot of schools that had 25%. So we round up and capture all of them. And then if they had to have more than 10 students to could stay in intensive as well. Again, ensuring that we're focusing on schools, more students to be able to support and improve literacy outcomes for kids. So those are the criteria in which we've established as a state so far. Just so you know, next steps, our SRLDs will work with districts to discuss those placements because there's an array of more data that can be utilized to make informed decisions on the supports in which these schools receive, one being your lowest 300, right? We can now use our lowest 300 that was released yesterday, so we can now add that data point to make informed decisions. So the first initial stab at it was what I just described, and then round two is our SRLDs working with districts to make those informed decisions on placement.
Thank you. If you'd like, you can continue with the presentation.
Thank you. So that's a great segue into our initial timeline for RAISE implementation. As you see on slide 11, our current 18 state regional literacy directors are working feverishly to provide professional learning and support in partnership with their districts and their schools across the state. We have provided a memo to our state, our school superintendents, and as well as our K-12 reading plan contacts in regards to the general overview of what RAISE entails. We have also identified USF as our fiscal agent and manager for this new RAISE program. So all of our new state regional literacy directors that are hired will come on board under USF purview. In September, we're currently advertising for our new executive director to lead this work moving forward, as well as adding our new state regional literacy directors. We've created an additional memo providing a little more detail in respect to who's been identified as a school that has an opportunity to receive more support, that also are required to have a school improvement plan, and gave them the details in respect to that. And we are also, in September, our SRLDs will have their initial meetings to have those discussions in which Chair Lupus just alluded to. In October, our goal is to hire and onboard all our SRLDs as well as our lead, our executive director. In the meantime, Just Read Florida and SRLDs are providing professional learning continuously, and we'll have some professional learning webinars that will go live in, statewide in October as well. And lastly, again, they'll continue to provide that ongoing support once they've had those district meetings to determine the level of support to be provided to individual schools on the list. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I have the pleasure, actually, and thank you all for the opportunity to bring some of the folks that are doing the work on the ground. We have a state regional literacy director here with us today, Karen Porter. So I have the pleasure of introducing her. She started in with Just Read Florida, I guess that's been probably a year ago, starting in October. So she's have almost a year under her belt. She has 25 years of experience teaching. She's served as a literacy coach. She's served as a school improvement specialist, actually under the Office of Differentiated Accountability at the Department of Education for a few years. And she's also served in Flagler Schools as a curriculum specialist for 5 years. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Karen Porter, one of our SRLDs that serves Duval, Clay, St. John's, and Nassau. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, and thank you to our Vice Chair, Vice Chancellor Miller, Chair Alupis, Vice Chair Foster, Democratic Ranking Member Davis, and all of the representatives who are here today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the great work that is taking place through our state regional literacy directors across the state. We began this work through the CARES Act, and we're now able to extend this work and continue this work now through the RAISE program. And as the SRLD for Region 7, once again, I support Clay County, Nassau, Duval, and St. John's. And I've been able to meet their needs through universal and targeted supports. What you see on the screen is an example of some of the universal supports that have been provided. I have supported districts in providing initial and ongoing training for the best standards and the science of reading. I've worked alongside districts to develop and strengthen literacy leadership teams. I've worked alongside districts in providing support and helping everyone understand evidence-based practices, but then also increasing the understanding of standards-aligned instructional materials. And here's an example of the targeted supports. I've supported the districts in the development and execution of their K-12 reading plans. And I've also worked with them in terms of the use of their data for screening and progress monitoring. And then I've also provided supports in training for K through two foundational skills to increase the achievement for grades 3 and beyond. And I'm excited to say that this has given me a great deal of impact with the schools. I've been able to impact personally 1,214 teachers, 135 school-based leaders and literacy coaches, but then also 77 district administrators and leaders. And I have ultimately impacted 134 schools, but this does not include the collaborative work that I've done also with the SRLDs and our regional and summer literacy institutes. And what you see here on the screen is feedback. I do a great deal of, I like to get a lot of feedback because I want to make sure as I provide supports, I'm immediately adjusting that support so it's very specific to what the needs are. And I've gathered some feedback, and this is some of the responses I've gathered from teachers, school-based leaders, and district leaders. And you can take a moment to look at some of what their feedback was. As I assess their feedbacks, I'm looking to see their reflections on a change in systems and their initial thoughts about implementation. How are we going to take this new learning that we've gained and implement it? Because I'm most concerned with it getting to the teachers, getting into the classroom, and really seeing that full implementation of what's being learned. And as I'm gathering feedback, I'm happy to say I'm seeing a great deal of that reflection. I'm seeing a great deal of that immediate implementation. And for the first year, my focus centered around knowledge building. And I like to refer to that as the what. And that knowledge building centered around the science of reading, the best standards for ELA, implementation, science, and K through 2 foundational skills. We're now, because of all of the work we've done on the what, we're now able to shift into the how. And that how is now focusing on the implementation and execution, use of progress monitoring data, shifting from PD to practice, and then also outcome checkpoints for K through 5. We really want to see how is the work we're doing in K through 2 impacting the outcomes for K through 5. Because if we can get those impacts to change beyond third grade, we're going to see fewer students dropping out. We're going to see fewer of those achievement gaps that are occurring in grades 3 through 12. And then there's also the outcome checkpoints, but then PD, also identifying specific PD needs that may be outside of the realm of some of the regular things that we provide. We also like to try to, as much as we can, tailor it to specific needs of a district. And what's been interesting that's been happening is that as we address the what and the how, teachers are defining the why for themselves. They are learning to define the why of why do we teach the way that we do? Why are we teaching in certain sequences? And then through the science of reading, they're really developing strong context around effective instructional sequences. And I think as teachers really began to grasp those effective instructional sequences, we're really going to see huge gains for our students in grades K through 3. And we now also have resources that support effective instructional sequences. Now through the best standards and now through the teaching of the science of reading, we're now learning how can I deliver an instructional sequence that's going to ensure a solid transfer of skills. We're starting to see that and we're starting to hone in on that. And I anticipate we're going to see a lot of growth as a result of that. But I also want to say through RAISE, we're now able to add in an additional layer of support. And that additional layer of support is going to be our intensive layers of support. And that's where we're on the ground, boots on the ground, in the classrooms with our K through 3 teachers, even if it's through modeling, providing multiple supports for teachers. So that way we can help them go from PD to practice and we be there right there as they're going through that implementation process. And through RAISE, we have afforded the opportunity to increase our SRLD task force, and that's gonna broaden our reach and increase the hands-on supports, as I said, for K through 3 teachers. And the CARES Act, the CARES and the RAISE Act are allowing us to support districts with what I believe is getting K through 3 literacy instruction right. In my 25 years of instruction and being in education, I don't think I've ever witnessed the state of Florida back up, take a second look at K through 2 instruction, and really put in the effort to get it right as we are through House Bill 7011. I just believe I've never seen this happen. I've been in education for 25 years, and I feel this is the first time we're really making a leap that's going to put us in a very different place for Florida schools and for Florida students. And there are some notable glows and grows throughout my first year. And some glows and grows, what I noticed in terms of some of our strong districts is that they prioritize professional development and learning for all levels of stakeholders. And they ensure also that school-based leaders get that support, that school-based leaders get strategic professional development. They invest in the development of teacher leaders. They ensure user-friendly performance data is accessible to all, and that they frequently review their data to develop actionable plans for improvement. And areas in which we can grow is increasing the utilization of the K-12 district self-reflection tool that aligns with our K-12 reading plan, ensuring all levels of stakeholders have access to data, and they all know that their accountability and their role in the K-12 plan, and then also assuring that pertinent performance data is available to all. And none of this, as I said before, would be possible without your dedication as a committee. You were committed to making House Bill 7011 a reality for Florida schools. Your work has put us in a unique position, as I said before, of getting K through three instruction right in Florida. And I speak on behalf of all SRLDs when I say we are honored to be a part of this great work. And I will now turn it over to Chancellor Carrie Miller.
Ms. Porter, before you leave, I just wanted to say one thing. As someone who's dedicated 25 years of your life to literacy, to hear you say what you just said means the absolute world to me and to this body. And I agree with you 100%. The focus on literacy that this legislative body has taken is unlike anything we've seen. But to hear you validate it, I just want you to know your words have such meaning to me personally, and I know to my colleagues on this committee. So thank you for everything that you've done.
I think it's also important that you know this has garnered a significant amount of excitement among teachers. Teachers feel like the first time their voice has been heard, and they feel that they've gotten supports and resources that are going to help them to effectively do what they've always wanted to do, and that's deliver good instruction. So the enthusiasm that I have is shared by teachers in Florida. Please know that. This has garnered a significant amount of refreshing, a significant amount of fresh energy, and just a significant amount of enthusiasm. So thank you for your commitment to House Bill 7011 and making it come to pass.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. It's almost like a mic drop moment, I have to add.
We should just stop the committee meeting right now. It's not gonna get any better than that.
So now I have the pleasure to introduce a district literacy leader to share her experience and her perspective with her collaboration and partnership with two of the SRLDs, State Regional Literacy Directors. Like I said, we're acronym heavy, as always. We love acronyms. But we have two SRLDs in the room to support her as well. They work hand in hand to effectively implement the policies and practices that you all have established to improve literacy outcomes for kids. And that is Mackenzie Bertram.
All right, good afternoon, and thank you so much to Carrie Miller, to Chair Vance Alupis, to Vice Chair Koster, to Fred Hawkins, whom I believe represents Osceola County, as well as each representative of the House of the Subcommittee and audience. I thank you for the invitation to address this distinguished group regarding improved literacy outcomes for all learners. An educator whom I have a great deal of respect for once opened a speech with these words, "And how are the children?" He went on to tell of this fabled and accomplished tribe that was known to have fearsome and intelligent warriors, and how surprising it was to learn that their traditional greeting passed from warrior to warrior was, "And how are the children?" This signified that the value that they placed on children's welfare, and that poignant question was not intended to be rhetorical. It was supposed to elicit a response that all the children are well, which would signify that peace and safety prevailed and that the proper function and responsibility of adults was to care for the educational, the behavioral, and the social welfare of children. I'm Mackenzie Bertram, proud K-12 literacy coordinator from Osceola County, and I'm here to deliver today a response to that fabled question, "How are the children?" Osceola County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Florida. We have 73,665 kiddos, or students. This year, our enrollment has increased, which means that our Our technology, our materials, and our personnel are really stretched to the max. We have about 53 schools that are district managed within our system, and that includes 30 elementaries or the K-8 elementary portion of a K-8. According to House Bill 7011, the raise, there are 25 schools in our district out of the 30 that have at least one grade level with fewer than 50% of its students reading on grade level as evidenced by the 2021 FSA ELA results. The other 17 or so that are listed by raise are charters that are functioning in our community. So since 2015-2016 school year, the School District of Osceola County has battled its way to a B, increasing our total points according to the school's the state's school grade model from 53% to 57% to 58% in 2019 in this eager quest for an A rating. Specifically, looking at proficiency with regard to literacy in grades 3 through 5, we have been fairly stagnant. The statistics that Carrie showed you earlier, we were 50% proficient in 2015, 2017, 2018, and 2019, and made up that giant navy blue color on the map there. Goal one of our strategic plan around academic success is to ensure high quality, equitable, standards-based instruction for each student in every classroom, every content, and every day. This is the uncompromising expectation of our superintendent and admired leader, Dr. Deborah Pace. In the last 18 months, however, across the district, the state, and I mean the country, to hold true to our respective uncompromising expectations amid the global pandemic, school closures, digital learning, and quarantines has been a challenge. But every person in this room knows that the pandemic has caused a learning loss and created learning gaps, as well as some other adverse childhood experiences. And this has happened to all profiles of students, but especially for those most fragile learners, those who attended school virtually, those who have an individualized education plan, our English language learners, our boys, our fifth graders, and our children of color. While I sincerely wish that this year would be a reset, the challenges of contact tracing and quarantine and illness remain. And the very encouraging news, however, is that the state of Florida has adopted the new benchmarks for excellent student thinking. The new BEST standards signify a return to the science of reading. Reading is a very complex endeavor. As depicted in this image of Scarborough's reading rope, the individualized strands within the language comprehension and the word recognition category have to work in unison so that as a child becomes increasingly automatic and increasingly accurate, the outcome is comprehension. The new benchmarks for excellent student thinking, I carry my standards book with me almost everywhere, including here. They remind us that foundational instruction really matters, that as a district, we have 948 teachers and administrators who have earned their reading endorsement since January of 2019. 780 of those are in the elementary setting. We have invested in an explicit, systematic, comprehensive, cumulative, multi-sensory foundational skills program for kindergarten through second grade that we have championed, that we have trained, and that we have monitored the implementation. The BEST standards also remind us that knowledge matters. And so I quote page 6 of our new standards book here in that the greatest reading comprehension tool is not a set of strategies or tools that are content-free. Rather, it is a well-stocked mind. Critical thinking cannot be separated from the object of that thinking, and we cannot think deeply, creatively, or critically about a subject that we have little knowledge of. I'm also reminded by the BEST standards that curriculum matters. And this year, the School District of Osceola County simultaneously adopted these new standards, as well as ELA high-quality instructional materials. And the materials we adopted, K-5 and then also 6-12, are superb. They build relevant background knowledge. They are aligned to the science of reading, aligned to the BEST standards. They engage learners in current, relevant, and rigorous texts and tasks, and they create a guaranteed and viable curriculum so that all students have access and opportunity to the foundational skills necessary to be a skilled reader. I'm also reminded that leadership matters. Leadership matters in the classroom, it matters in the school building, it matters on the school board, it matters for the superintendent, it matters by policymakers such as yourselves. Leadership matters. And one great example of the leadership is the creation of the state regional literacy directors who have been assigned to regions across the state to improve literacy outcomes for all learners. We have appreciated and valued their bench support. I am here in part to provide an update on the literacy package that you passed and describe the absolute benefits of the state regional literacy directors. I had a vision for the kind of professional learning that it would take to implement brand new standards and brand new curriculum simultaneously, and I have leaned so heavily on our state regional literacy directors for their support in content creation, in execution, and in monitoring. We co-created a four-part professional learning series that is rooted in the science of reading, exploring phonological awareness, phonics, phonemic awareness, encoding, decoding, orthographic mapping. I could go on. It was imperative that we start at our district level with our K-12 district resource teacher team. And that team of willing literacy experts has greatly been impacted by the work of our state regional literacy directors in their depth of knowledge and their precision of application regarding literacy. The SRLDs have further grown our conscious competence through presenting monthly at each of our literacy coach meetings at all three levels. They have been attending our sessions since February of this year. We have addressed each strand of the new standards with all 53 literacy coaches. And then with every elementary teacher, K through five, in a train the trainer model on June 3rd and 4th, at the end of the year, and then again at pre-planning this year. So these two ladies that you see flanking me in the picture are right over here, Jen Bakayoki and Mandy Rowland. I'm eternally grateful for your help and support. The impact of our collective efforts is yet to be seen, but the metrics by which we will guide our efforts are as follows. We aim to have 100% of teachers following our curriculum unit plans and high-quality instructional materials for reading foundations. And our goal really is your shared goal, is that all children in the state of Florida be well and be fully literate and possibly even biliterate. So as you serve the subcommittee and conduct business and create policy and introduce bills, I implore you to consider how your decisions have already helped us and will continue to help us answer this question that all the children are well in Osceola and also across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Bertram. So Vice Chancellor Miller, you're going to bring us in for a landing?
Yes.
Okay. Please get us on the ground quickly.
Sir. Thank you, McKenzie. Yes, that'd be great. So I'm going to...
I'm sorry. Representative McCurdy, do you have a question? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bertram, thank you for that presentation. My question about the endorsements, do we have a number of teachers that we want to see be endorsed by a certain time in the state?
You recognize.
So great question, and I'm actually going to go ahead and skip to a slide. Okay, so here's where we are to date with our reading endorsement. So just so you know who's required to receive the reading endorsement, teachers who provide summer reading camps for our students that have been identified at risk of being retained in third grade, they're required to attend summer camp. Any teacher providing that summer reading camp is required to be endorsed or certified in reading. Teachers instructing students in third grade that have been retained, again, the benefit of an extra year of intensive intervention for them to catch up, those teachers, too, are required to have the reading endorsement or certification in reading. Also, all K-12 teachers that provide intensive intervention, that's defined by providing Tier 3 instructional supports, and what that means is those kids that have a substantial deficiency in reading and need the most intensified intervention supports to catch up,
those teachers are required to be endorsed or certified in reading, as well as our literacy coaches across the state of Florida are required to be endorsed or certified in reading. So what you see on the right-hand side is actually the number of endorsements that have been earned year to year starting in 2017. We have a total of 45,394 educators endorsed in the state of Florida. 54% of those occurred in the last year and a half. So we have increased the number of teachers drastically that have earned the reading endorsement to provide quality instruction for kids moving forward. But you'll see we still have 15,499 teachers to go that are required to receive the reading endorsement. They fall in one of these categories. We still have 15,499 teachers to go. I will say this was pulled April 2021, so I have a feeling that number will decrease. Yep.
Follow up.
Very small, please.
Very small. The reason I asked that question, Chancellor, was because I was just thought about the current teachers in current classrooms right now who've already gone to college and have zero prep, and what if any, the state role would play in getting those teachers prepared. That's it.
Chair.
You recognize.
So that's a great segue. And so what we'll do is we will talk about teacher preparation programs. So through House Bill 7011, now all teachers are required, if they're in a teacher educator program that's listed here on this slide, they are required to exit with a full reading endorsement. So our teacher candidates now will exit the teacher preparation programs with a full reading endorsement. What that means for teacher preparation programs is our elementary and pre-K through grade 3 certification programs will just have to add competency 5. Our reading endorsement is 1 through 5 to provide the full reading endorsement. It's a bigger lift for our secondary certification areas where they provide competency 1 and 2 currently. They will now have to provide the entire reading endorsement and earn that reading endorsement when their candidates exit their program.
Okay. Vice Chancellor, we have about 2 more minutes.
Okay, perfect. So the next slide you see here is another area of focus for House Bill 7011, which really improved communication to parents as it relates to how students are doing in kindergarten through third grade that have been identified with a substantial deficiency in reading. Another improvement was ensuring a portfolio was established, which is a one way to show that you can be promoted to fourth grade as early as the student is identified that might be at risk of being retained in third grade. And there's also one other additional requirement that requires the department to provide more resources to parents as part of their Read at Home plan to provide those resource supports, parent tips to improve literacy outcomes for kids with a heavy focus on dyslexia. Stop. Okay. So two other things coming down the pipe, literacy coaches we talked about earning a credential. That's coming down the pipe, released in June. We also will start developing school principal professional learning in evidence-based practices and programs because our leaders matter. And lastly, House Bill 7011 established our VPK through grade 8 progress monitoring system, which we are underway and on time for procuring that system to roll out universally in 22-23. And you see the implementation timeline delineated on the slide. That's it.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you so much, Vice Chancellor.
Thank you.
Members, in the interest of moving forward, just to make sure we finish on time, we're going to move straight into our next portion of the panel, but I want to let you know I've known Vice Chancellor Miller for almost a decade now and is one of the smartest people I know, and she'll certainly be available to answer any other questions you have. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, we now have Dr. Elaine Colon, who is the Director of Assessment and Accreditation for the University of Florida College of Education, as well as Dr. Tina Smith-Bonahue, the Associate Dean for Student Affairs and Graduate Studies, also for the University of Florida College of Education. And they are joining us via WebEx. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity, Chair Lupus, Vice Chair Koster, Democratic Ranking Member Davis, and the subcommittee members. It's a privilege and an honor to be here today. We're going to spend a few minutes speaking to you about the University of Florida's initial teacher preparation program in elementary education. There are two elements of House Bill 7011 that we will address today. The first is that beginning in the 2022-23 academic year, with that cohort, our program completers identified in those certificate area programs that you saw previously must graduate with a reading endorsement, and that was referenced just a few minutes ago. Additionally, starting next year in the 2022-23 academic year, and that sounds like it's so far away, but it's really just next year, teachers supervising interns in those identified certificate area programs must hold a reading endorsement or certificate as well. So how's the reading endorsement being integrated into teacher preparation programs? We're going to share a little bit about the University of Florida's initial teacher preparation program in elementary education. And this is the more traditional pathway, if you will, to teacher preparation or to the classroom. Our program leads to a Bachelor of Arts degree in education. And so students are admitted, or what we call them candidates in our programs, candidates are admitted in their junior year. And so they essentially have 2 years to complete all of the program requirements. It's 60 credit hours, upper division, junior and senior year to complete the program. And the elementary education program leads to a professional certificate in elementary education, K-6, and also the ESOL and reading endorsements. And so we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the reading endorsement components of the program. So as was mentioned previously, the reading competencies, there are five of them that must be addressed and assessed in our state-approved program. And so there are 114 Florida reading competency performance indicators that are distributed through competencies 1 through 4. And we address and assess those across 7 courses in our program. So that's across the junior and senior years. Those 7 courses are distributed for a total of about 21 credit hours. And so candidates in our program complete assignments such as creating lesson plans, using evidence-based strategies, constructing assessments, case studies where the candidates analyze P-12 student data and design interventions. It's coordinated across those 7 courses and across those course instructors. And as you might imagine, to address and assess competencies 1 through 4 requires extensive planning to design a comprehensive and seamless program for our candidates. There's also, as was mentioned previously, competency 5, and that's the summative demonstration or the culminating demonstration. And that is covered across 15 Florida performance indicators, reading performance indicators, and we execute that through a reading, what we call a reading practicum, that's 2 credit hours. And so to speak a little bit more about that demonstration of accomplishment for that competency 5, we have a clinically rich program with a year-long internship that students engage in their senior year. And that internship is coupled with this reading practicum. So specifically in that demonstration of accomplishment of competency 5, there are about 200 field-based hours where our candidates are in the field, supervised and evaluated by university faculty. And there are key assessments or course assignments that we have that are built into that practicum component that are applied in that school-based setting. And so as 2 examples here, they complete a small group case study where the candidates identify a small group of students and work with them for a period of several weeks. They administer assessments, they use assessment data to inform their ongoing instruction. They target the needs of individual students, progress monitoring along the way, and evaluate that instruction and set goals for the future. So that's one example, that case study. They also do a series of instructional practice videos in that practicum experience. So So in terms of meeting the requirements for House Bill 7011, in our initial teacher preparation programs, again, that's kind of the more traditional pathway, competencies 1 through 4 are already embedded in coursework and those early field experiences. And likely programs around the state really need to add that competency 5, the demonstration component. Again, that is a heavy lift adding that field-based component, but competency 5 is pretty much where the initial teacher preparation programs are going to be targeting their efforts. In terms of educator preparation institutes, we call them EPIs, and that's kind of the alternative pathway to the classroom. Typically, those programs are a little shorter in duration. They likely are already covering competencies 1 and 2, but are going to need to add competencies 3, 4, and 5, as was stated before, which means additional coursework and those field experience components being built out in the programs. And so depending on the program's context, this requirement, adding the reading endorsement requirement as part of 7011 may mean new course development perhaps for programs. Institutional approvals, which is no easy feat, as you might imagine, working through college curriculum committees, university curriculum committee processes to get these courses approved before they can be delivered. Possible technology issues around supervision, whether supervisors have access to live observations in the classrooms, depends on conditions in the school districts right now. So there may be some considerations around technology, recording lesson plans, for example, that are evaluated offsite. And then this idea of additional credentialed mentor teachers or supervising teachers to host our candidates in the field that have either the reading endorsement or certification. And so at the University of Florida, we're lucky we have longstanding partnerships with our local school districts. We collaborate with our district personnel to administer what we call a volunteer survey each semester. And so we are able to gauge whether our supervising teachers that are volunteering to host our candidates are appropriately credentialed with the certifications and endorsements needed. And in our most recent survey of those hosting our elementary candidates, over 95% of those supervising teachers already held the reading endorsement. So we're in really good shape locally in that way for our elementary education program. I want to echo a comment also that was made previously around secondary, the kind of 6 to 12 middle and high school areas. If you think about the English language arts teachers, less likely to currently hold that reading endorsement. And so that is something that we're going to have to consider in our secondary English education program. For example, we have an EPI. And so we anticipate having fewer teachers that are currently credentialed to host our students. And so that's something that we'll be, you know, needing to plan for and work on. In terms of our local context, we are very fortunate to have two pathways to the reading endorsement available to our local school partners and, in fact, around the state, because these are online programs. The University of Florida offers a graduate certificate in dyslexia and also the Lastinger Literacy Matrix. So there are two options that are available to help kind of increase that supply that's needed. So Dr. Smith-Bonahue and I are grateful for the opportunity to share with you today the good work of our faculty and our school partners at the University of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much, members. Any questions? Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess this question would be for Elaine. Just want to make sure that I understand. My understanding is that the initial teacher preparation is going to be or is now available through the coursework that a student would get during their four-year bachelor degree, and that the EPI would be something that a teacher that's already in the field can go back and take to get those additional competencies. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
You're recognized.
May I respond? Thank you. Yes. But also the EPI, another way to think about that is also career changers. So for example, those folks already hold bachelor's degrees, perhaps in the content area. And so career changers is another, they may be a teacher of record working on a temporary certificate, or they could just be a career changer and be enrolling full time in an EPI program at an institution.
Okay, thank you.
Members, any additional questions? I have one quick question. How much does Competency 5 overlap with the internship? You recognize.
Thank you. It depends. For us, we couple those two together. So most often the intern is in a setting in which they can also do those practicum experiences or and execute those practicum hours. If, for example, they are in a, I'll say a kind of discipline-specific classroom where they're working specifically with an elementary math teacher, for example, or science teacher, then they would have to find that experience somewhere else within their placement. Of course, we help them to do that. But generally, we think about those two pieces as coupled together, but we want to ensure they're getting all of the hours and experiences they need prior to program completion.
Fantastic. Dr. Colon, Dr. Smith-Montague, thank you so much for joining us today. All right, members, that concludes most of the content for today. I want to, before we finish, we have a few more minutes, but I just want to welcome three new members. I feel like we won the lottery. We have Representative, it's like the lottery, the draft pick lottery in the NFL. We've got Representative DeSigley, Representative Caruso, and we picked up Representative Duggan off waivers. And I'd like to also welcome my vice chair, our new vice chair, Representative Tracy Koster. So awesome to have you. Oh, excuse me, Representative Foster. So wonderful to have you in this role. And Ranking Member Davis, again, for her leadership. I missed all of you so much over the summer. I hope you have an incredible summer. And again, you know, I get emotional, but to hear in the meaningful the policies that came out of this committee are to the work that they've done over the last few decades, it's the reason we get up every morning. It's the reason we work so hard. So to everyone who spoke today, thank you so much. And with that, Representative Koster moves, we rise.